you know what? It's not just the far left that thinks the war in Iraq was a problem. We think it's a problem. Those who actually had a Christian worldview, a true Christian worldview, I'm not talking about a Richard Land or a Tony Beam Christian worldview. I'm talking about something that's based in the scriptures. We have a real problem with the war in Iraq. Constitutionalists have a problem with the war in Iraq. Why? Because not only was it an undeclared war, not properly declared according to the Constitution, but because it's an insane war of aggression in which we're attacking people that didn't do anything to us, that didn't aggress us. And so Oliver North, although he's having his little pity party here, has to understand that there is good reason to doubt George Bush, to think that he lied, to believe that the intelligence that was there to support us going into the war never really existed, and that we're talking about some kind of a horrible sort of retaliation by George Bush for some feud his dad had with Saddam Hussein, for all I know. I think it was fabricated, and it's been a lie all along, and you're hearing that from somebody who's anything but a leftist, and you all know that there are many others besides the left who have opposed the war. I don't think the left has opposed the war for the right reasons, by the way, but they have been opposing the war, and they should be opposed to it. Are you tired of politicians who raise your taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decision? The power of positive change is in your hands when you vote for libertarians. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. On Greenville, the business meeting, which was just last night, is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Augusta Road north of I-85, one block before reaching Malden Road. And that is subject to change. I've been told it may be moving back to the Malden Library, so check in before you make the trip next month. Visitors are welcome. The Spartanburg monthly meeting is on the first Thursday of the month at 6:30 p.m. in the private dining room at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. Also, to talk politics, join us in Greenville for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. Apparently, that will be going on this month, but it may not be going on the month right between Christmas and New Year. It's at Cafe Underground, just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We've come up for a break here, and we're going to be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us this morning, and we are trying to bring you great program today, but sorry that we're having some trouble getting the broadcast over the airwaves, it seems, and if you're noticing some technical difficulties, please hang with us. People are doing the best they can to get things resolved. At any rate, we have another, I suppose we should do, well, let's do this article with Walter Williams. You know, I always love reading what Walter Williams has to say. Do we really care about children, he says. I cringe with disgust when I hear politicians say, we are doing it for the children. What's worse is so many Americans mindlessly fall hook, line, and sinker for the hype. Judging by our actions, Americans could not care less about future generations, and future generations will curse us for it. Let's look at it. According to several respected authorities, including the Concord Coalition, chaired by former Senators Warren Rudman and Robert Kerry, the Congressional Budget Office, U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow, and the Social Security Administration, the estimated present value of the unfunded liability of Social Security and Medicare ranges between $61 trillion and $75 trillion. Williams asked, what is this present value business? Simply put, between $61 trillion and $75 trillion is the money that would have to be put aside right now at current interest rates in order to meet the future obligations of Social Security and Medicare. To put it an astronomical sum like $61 trillion or $75 trillion is a bit of perspective. The value of our entire national output of goods and services in 2004 was only $12 trillion. Congress can't put aside $75 trillion as reserves against future liabilities of Social Security and Medicare. Therefore, according to the Dallas, Texas-based National Center for Policy Analysis, the annual rate of Social Security unfunded liabilities is growing at a $667 billion clip, and Medicare at $4 trillion. What does all this mean? It means a little in the pocketbook terms, in terms of today's Americans who are 65 and older. They will collect their Social Security checks and their promised Medicare benefits, but not so for future generations. Here's that future according to House Ways and Means Committee testimony given by Dr. John Goodman, president of the NCPA, May 2005. In 2020, combined Social Security and Medicare deficits will equal almost 29% of federal income taxes. At that point, the federal government will have to stop doing almost a third of what it does. Today, by 2030, about the midpoint of the baby boomer retirement years, federal guarantees to Social Security and Medicare will require one in every two income tax dollars. By 2050, they will require three in four. And by 2070, Social Security and Medicare will consume all federal revenues. These are some optimists who seek to minimize the pending disaster that will be caused by these and other unfunded or federal unfunded liabilities. They argue that federal government can always meet its obligations through its power to tax. According to some estimates, by 2030, Social Security and Medicare obligations alone will require a 50% increase in payroll taxes. If tax increases are off the table, 2030 will see a 30% reduction in the promised Social Security benefits and a stringent rationing of health care services promised by Medicare. There's another solution. Even though Congress can't increase our life expectancy, they can raise the age of Social Security and Medicare eligibility. Were Congress to make 80 as the age for Social Security and Medicare eligibility, they'd solve the problem because most of us would be dead. Let's look at the raw politics of the Social Security Medicare situation. Few, if any, of our 535 congressmen will be around in 2030 and latter when the real crunch comes, but they are subject to today's, not tomorrow's, political pressures. Similarly, a few of today's Americans 65 years of age and older will be around. Other than mouthing a concern for future generations, both have little economic incentive to be concerned about what happens in 2030. After all, what do they have at stake? In 2030, will young people in the labor force be willing to see themselves taxed at Social Security rates of 20, 30, and 40% to take care of some old people? I don't think they will be. That will politically fly, and they might begin to get ideas about euthanasia. In addition to economic strife, Social Security and Medicare are laying the groundwork for intergenerational conflict. Unfortunately, the politics of today don't give us room to prevent these twin disasters. Walter E. Williams is professor of economics at George Mason University, and my former professor, and we're glad to have had him as a mentor. That's for sure. Well, Walter has hit the nail right on the head, of course. You see, what happens is people who are politicians have to please their constituencies. Their whole goal is to stay in power, to receive their paycheck, and to get reelected, basically. And if the people who aren't born yet don't vote. The people who vote are the people here and now, and if those people here and now care to be irresponsible and uncaring about the future, then they, if they don't revolt against such thinking at any rate, then the politicians can get away with transferring all the excesses of the present to future generations, and the debt is continuing to climb. Now, debt cannot go on forever. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to repudiate the national debt. I mean, it's a house of cards. There's no way we can pay off the $8 trillion that we currently have. Not really. And there's really no way that we could pay off the 61 or 85 or whatever the number is trillion that would come just from these unfunded entitlement programs. So at some point, something's going to collapse. Something's got to give. It can't continue this way. Now, they can print more money. Walter didn't mention that. They can just hyperinflate like other countries do, get rid of the debt. That would work as far as getting rid of the debt. It would put us into an economic tailspin and chaos. So we need to be careful for such a thing, obviously. How can you protect yourself as a Christian thinking about these things? Well, what you should do from a financial planning point of view is make sure that you have some hard assets, something in your home or, you know, wherever you might be able to store them that is real. Now, government has been talking about confiscating, and we've heard reports in your rate, confiscating or making it illegal once again to own gold as it was for so many years after FDR. But gold is one thing you should own. And silver. And how much should you own? Well, you should get to the point where you saved up at least, even if you're, you know, a young family with meager means, at least saving up a couple thousand dollars in present Federal Reserve note value in gold and silver coins. And you should at least be planning to get closer to $5,000 range and maybe even a little bit higher if possible. In addition to that, you should own some brass and lead. And I'm talking about guns and ammunition. Those things do not go down in value. They continue to rise, and we'd recommend those things as well to hold on to. What happens is when you have a hyperinflation, your gold will retain its value, and the more, believe it or not, the more debt you have during hyperinflation, the better off you are. Because as the debt, the inflation takes off and the money becomes less valuable, the amount that you owe becomes relatively less valuable or less costly for you. So, for instance, before the hyperinflation in Germany in the late 1910s, you had a massive inflation of millions and millions of percent per year, so that they just kept printing new bills with more zeros on the end, and as they did so, debts that used to seem enormous, like for instance, a million marks or Reichsmarks. All of a sudden, when you can go down and the smallest note available is a 10 million mark, Reichsmark note, you simply take one of those notes down to the bank, hand it to them, say, pay off my debt, please, and cancel your debt. And that would be the way it would be with the gold coins, because those things would hold their value. There may be $465 today for an ounce of gold, and you have one of those coins, and guess what would happen if you had hyperinflation? Well, it's not going to stay only worth 465 Federal Reserve notes. It might go into being worth 4 million or 5 million for one coin, because the paper money is simply paper. It has no intrinsic value. So if you have one of those coins in your safe, believe it or not, the best thing you can have during hyperinflation is debt. Now, that's really odd for us, because we know the borrower is servant to the lender. We know that the scripture teaches us, in order to avoid social chaos, especially between believers, we should owe no man anything. These are principles from the Word of God against being in debt. But this is presuming that there was a sound money system. There was not a fiat currency, no paper money at that time. They were talking about real real money like gold or silver that was being utilized. So when we have a house of cards like a paper money system, you have to think a little bit outside the box here, beyond the conventional wisdom. It's not bad to have debt if you're going through hyperinflation, and be prepared for that. Be prepared to have a bunch of debt you can pay off. You say, well, that's so hard to live under debt. Of course it is. It's a terrible thing. It's one of the consequences of a sinful and wicked state that's gone out of its way to take a proactive stance on printing money. But given that situation, if you the more debt you have, think about it, and those, as long as you have some gold during for the catastrophe that comes, you will be able to pay off all your debt rather quickly. What should you do? If you, let's say you have a house now that's worth, you know, $200,000, and you paid it off. Well, imagine what would happen if you took that money, $200,000, and put it in an offshore account in stocks, because those are other things that will survive hyperinflation, at least to some extent over time, and a bunch of it into gold and silver. Well, you would be able to have your equity safe and in the house and yet be able to pay off the debt and have a windfall as soon as the hyperinflation took off. Now, if you have no debt on your house also, and you have hyperinflation, the value of your house is not going to go down. It's as real as gold or silver. So bear that in mind. You're not going to lose anything if you have no debt. You just won't get the windfall. So there is an advantage, financial planning-wise, to having debt when you have these governments that are probably going to hyperinflate the debt away. Just FYI. Something to think about, at any rate. Some people may not have thought about that at all. We don't do financial planning on this show as probably as much as we should. Of course, that's my main profession at Integrity Group, and I'd be happy to talk with you about it. Personally, if you want to call me at 864-244-6464, I'd be happy to consult with you about some of those issues. Okay, the Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. Palmetto State, are you tired of reading liberal columnists? The Times Examiner features outstanding conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville or at their offices located at 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville. A full year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. 864-268-0576 is the number to call to get a subscription. 864-268-0576. If you want to place an ad with the Times Examiner, give David a call at 859-6817. That's 859-6817. And you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Time for the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This 11th day of November, 2005, and let's have a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 38 degrees, downtown 40 degrees, Anderson 36, Clemson 40. Today is going to be sunny and highs in the mid-60s, and there's also a frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And Dr. Coben has been writing his new book, which is Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And under each chapter, he puts on a few famous quotes, and under Chapter 4, which is the divine ordination of state criminals and legalized crime, he has a quote by Lysander Spooner. And he says here, the ballot is a mere substitute for a bullet.
And indeed, very good. We like to hear those kinds of comments because they help us understand the power and effect of the state and what the state actually does through its coercive measures. Okay, we'd like to welcome you back again to the show here in just a second. All right, there we go. We have a quotation here from Tom Blankley, the editorial page editor of the Washington Times. When G.W. Bush raised taxes, the House conservatives rebelled and beat his proposal on the floor initially, but those were responses of only factions within the conservative firmament. What does that tell you? Is the question our research staff asks. It tells you that there's not a whole lot of true conservatives in the Senate. Of course, we knew that. Well, that's no surprise to us. That Blankley is pointing out. We're not surprised by Blankley's remarks, but it is well worth pointing out. We read something from Oliver North earlier that showed what his idea of what a conservative is, just blind lockstep support for George W. Bush, which is not the good thing to do. Where George Bush could be doing something that's evil and wrong, folks. Yes, if you're a Republican listening today, want you to know that he could be doing something evil. In fact, he is. Here's something from Paul Craig Roberts. Still no jobs. The October payroll jobs report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows employment growth for the month essentially at a standstill. The economy created only created 46,000 private sector jobs. The bulk of those, 33,000, were in construction. The domestic service sector of the economy, which has been the source of new jobs in the 21st century, experienced no job growth in October. In the 21st century, the U.S. economy has ceased to generate new jobs in middle and upper middle class professions. This is a serious economic, social, and political problem that receives no attention. There is a great deal of meltdown inside the U.S. economy. Manufacturing is hollowed out. The decline in manufacturing means a decline in the engineering and other professions that serve it. Knowledge jobs are also being lost to offshore outsourcing and to H-1B, L-1, and other work visas. In October, there were 81,301 corporate layoffs. The government does not keep records of the U.S. jobs lost to offshore outsourcing and work visas for foreigners, so with so few jobs available in the educated professions, the future of U.S. universities would seem to be bleak. That's not true, but... We were just talking about this the other night when we were talking about economics. You know, the idea that somehow, some way, by other people in foreign countries taking over jobs, that means Americans are going to be permanently unemployed, sitting on the curb, twiddling their thumbs with nothing to do because they have a bunch of skills that can't be utilized. This is not the case, folks. The economy is something that's dynamic and always subject to change. And if really bright people go to university and then find out that their job skills are no longer useful where they live, then those really smart people are going to figure out something else to do. Yeah, they may have made a bad choice by going and becoming a kerosene lamp manufacturer and thinking about the, you know, metallurgy that's involved and the chemistry and so forth. And when they get out of school, they find out that, hey, no one wants to employ us anymore because some guy invented a light bulb. Well, you know what? They can either be retrained or go and get other kinds of training and through more education, different degree, and come out and start off again. There's no guarantee that just because you go to college and study engineering that engineering or computer science or whatever else is always going to be a profession available to you. You have to be willing to adapt and change in a free market economy. There is no security and markets, if you want to call it that. There is no assurance, because as soon as somebody invents something else that is of use to people, or some other way to do a certain service, well, things are going to change. There's not going to be the same system statically tomorrow that there is today. So, at any rate, Paul Craig Roberts really misses the boat when he talks about immigration policy and the loss of jobs and all this sort of thing. And all that stuff, as far as I'm concerned, is largely irrelevant. What's the Christian worldview? Well, God tells you to work hard, be a good steward, not be lazy, not to lie, to be honest. Those are things that are principles in God's Word. But it never tells you that you have security given the current economic system. In fact, Proverbs tells you, take heed to know that the state of your flocks and the condition of your herds, for riches are not forever, neither does the crown endure to all generations. You have to know that what you've got, whether it's your intellectual capital or your physical capital, is not safe. That you always have to be prepared and be on the lookout for changes and take those opportunities into hand when they're available and capitalize on them as best you can. You might suffer in this world. It's true. You might suffer something. You might lose something. There is no guarantee of anything in life. As far as economically speaking, you don't know the future, and so you need to be well educated. That's why when you go to school, don't just go to school to study one discipline only, but study enough that you can learn from other disciplines, learn something broadly, so that you become an educated person, someone who can think, someone who can act in ways that are versatile, and you might be able to improve your own lifestyle when future tragedies or changes might come along. So bear that in mind, folks, as you're going about, especially young people listening who would plan to be going to school to take a major. Make sure you study the liberal arts and study and become a broadly educated person if you want to be a professional so that you can possibly move elsewhere into another field. It also doesn't hurt for any young man to take up a degree in business, like an MBA, not an undergraduate degree, but if you get an engineering degree, just plan on staying an extra 2 years in college and getting an MBA. From somewhere. It'll help you get some business skills, and that may be useful if one day you have to start your own business or if you have to work in the business world. So there are lots of things universities can do to help alleviate the current economic situation that people find themselves in. Unfortunately, so many people are worried about the status of their own job because they believe they have some sort of right or in a free market to maintain the security of their profession, their job, onshore or otherwise, and this is simply not true. It's not biblical, and it's frankly the idea of trying to maintain your job is protectionist, mercantilist, and even socialist. It's not part of the Christian worldview, and we need to be careful before we start spouting off all this stuff about jobs being lost and things like that. Okay, Paul Craig Roberts again says, in the war in Iraq, if the war in Iraq lasts another 10 years, as the Bush administration keeps telling us, the world of, and consider what's going to happen. We're going to have problems. And Tony Snow says, world events seem to be vindicating George Bush's vision and his tactics. Iraq soon will install elected constitutional government. Syria has begun handing over bad guys. Arab nations are taking baby steps toward democracy. Well, you know, you got two different viewpoints here. Here on this one, Paul Craig Roberts is right. The Bush, if the war lasts another 10 years, as the Bush administration tells us, we're going to end up having a huge bill and catastrophic results. On the other hand, here you got Tony Snow, who's thinking things are actually working out pretty well. And we have some doubt about that, of course. There's a conflicting vision, apparently, or perspective on what's actually happening in the world with places like Iraq. In the top headlines of the world today, we have Thank You Veterans, as of course it's Veterans Day today. And although we're appreciative of people who take up their cause in the military, we have to be very careful when we're applauding people who are in the military to say, look, you were fighting in an aggressive war, and Christians should not be involved in an aggressive war. We know that you didn't start it, you aren't the instigator of it, and you may not even have known what the true facts were when you were fighting. That's fine, that may exonerate the person in the military, but we have to be careful when we're applauding them to say, look, you ought to feel badly now looking back at all the thousands and thousands of people that were killed by the George Bush's raid in Iraq. And think to yourself, why was I over there doing that? What did these people actually do to me? What threat truly was there to America? And when you begin to realize that, you may find some need for repentance. So I raise that up just because we have to put some perspective on things. We're certainly in favor of anyone who's been of service in the military, as far as, you know, doing their job and trying to do it well. But as far as fighting aggressive warfare and killing innocent people, how can that ever be justified from a Christian point of view? It can't. Just can't be, folks. Okay, let's see. Three men and one woman carried out the Jordan bombings. I guess they're still doing some research into that. Condoleezza Rice is heading off to Iraq. Big deal. Let's see. Well, the politicians are considered cameras at the Supreme Court. That's sort of interesting. I wonder why that would be the case. Let's see what the Methodist bishops have to say. We're going to look at them in a minute. Our Internet services running a little bit slow here this morning, but Methodist bishops repent Iraq war completely. That's a headline that should be interesting to reading. Let's take a look at a couple other stories that might be of interest to us. One is the from EdWatch, internal baccalaureate alert. EdWatch is forwarding. Before we start this, I think we're coming up to a break time. Let's go ahead and jump to a break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and bear with us, we'll be right back.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. The International Baccalaureate Alert. EdWatch is forwarding this press release from PABIS with the note that many school districts are now quietly adopting international baccalaureate programs because of federal grant money is available to offset some of the costs. State legislatures are also passing funding measures to offset the additional IB cost. Taxpayers always pay the extra cost. However, regardless of which pot it is taken from, please discuss these issues with your parents and local school boards. Talking points include the fact that IB curriculum is set by international bodies. Student tests are forwarded to Geneva, Switzerland for scoring. And a foreign database collects and scores through the personal values-laden data on individual American students. IB is an outrageous violation of legal local control. It also teaches the value of global citizenships. And so there should be something that we should be concerned about there, don't you think? Well, we should be concerned about anything that's in the public school. In fact, why are we even worried about it at all in the public school? It seems like a whole lot better deal just to abandon the thing entirely. Abandon the public school is really the only long-term solution for maintaining liberty here in the United States of America. Actually, you know what the better thing to do is? A League of the South idea. How about Southern independence? Have you thought about that? Why can't the old Confederate States of America, which never really officially disbanded, as well as any other Western states that would want to join along with us, maybe even Vermont, who knows, have them come along and join a new Confederate Union, an independent nation, free of Washington and free of the northeastern and perhaps San Francisco, L.A. areas, and their control and their liberal control. Let them have their own liberal world, and let us go on with our own differently. What would be wrong with seceding? From a Christian point of view, if secession is peaceful and allows us to certainly, if it's peaceful, even if it's not, but if secession is peaceful and we can achieve much of what we're hoping to achieve. As Christians who are engaging their culture, then why wouldn't we support it? People ask me, why are you in favor of secession, Dr. Coben? Well, it's precisely for that. I don't want to have to be beleaguered by these Republicans or Democrats, of course, that rule things and ruin people's lives. And I want to be free. I want to live under the principles of the Founding Fathers. And the South is certainly big enough to be its own country. Even each individual state in the South is big enough to be its own country. And we could secede and have a Southern independence movement and a Western independence movement that would allow liberty to thrive once again in North America, while the rest of the states continue their way downhill into socialism and oblivion, which is always where socialism goes. It's very sad, state of affairs the way things turn out quite often. All right, well, let's see. We have also a note on One for the Road. Debbie, this is from Debbie Kidd. Debbie Kidd's website, One for the Road. And Dr. Stanley Montieth says, the peak oil myth. The price of oil and natural gas was increasing before Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, destroyed almost a fourth of our oil production, raised the price of gasoline to over $3 a gallon and the price of oil to $70 a barrel. Will the rising cost of oil devastate our economy? The website HubertPeak.com, Hubbard Peak, HubertPeak.com warns, oil will become more expensive and less available. This will be painful in the industrialized economies, which have become totally dependent on oil, and less developed countries where oil use is extremely sensitive to price escalation. This is false, by the way. I don't know what this fellow is going to say, Montieth, but we'll continue to read on. Dr. M. King Hubbert worked at the Shell Oil Research Laboratory in Houston, analyzed the oil reserves in the major oil companies, and issued a 1956 report that predicted U.S. oil production would peak between 1965 and 70. Production peaked in 71 and has declined since. The U.S. natural gas production peaked at the same year. How did Dr. Hubbert know what was going to happen? Was he clairvoyant? Was he lucky? Did he have access to secret information? Dr. Kenneth DeFaze worked at the Shell Oil Research Laboratory in Houston, taught at the University of Minnesota and Oregon State University, joined the staff at Princeton in 1967 and worked there until he retired. Dr. DeFaze's book, Beyond Oil, The View from Hubbert's Peak, he predicted the world's oil production would peak between 2004 and 2008. During a recent interview, Dr. DeFaze predicted world production would peak in late 2005 or early 2006. If Dr. DeFaze is correct, what will happen to our economy? What will happen to the world economy? Well, what will happen? That's an interesting question. Here's what Wikipedia says. Oil depletion is an inescapable result of extracting and consuming oil faster than it can be replaced. Because the oil resource is not infinite, but it's virtually infinite. This is a false statement also. In terms of humanity, the amount of oil is so enormous in the Earth's crust that it might as well be infinite, as Julian Simon points out. But it continues on, and its current replacement rate is quite slow relative to use. It will at some point be depleted. Is oil a finite resource? Will oil production peak in late 2005 or 2006? Many global geologists, media pundits, oil company executives, and people that employ the claim the world is running out of oil. The Hubbert Peak Com states, as humanity comes in terms with the inevitability of a world beyond oil, the remaining oil supply will be exploited three ways. One, to maintain a global economy. Two, to create a new solar economy, which will not depend on oil. And three, to fight over that oil that remains. Most electricity that produces our products and hearts and heats our homes is generated by burning coal, which pollutes the environment, and natural gas. But Lee Raymond, CEO of ExxonMobil, claims the U.S. is running out of natural gas, Reuters News Service reports. After weak prices in the 1990s due to oversupply, the natural gas production in North America will probably continue to decline unless there is another big discovery, ExxonMobil Corporation's chief executive said on Tuesday. Gas production has peaked in North America, chief executive Lee Raymond told reporters at Reuters Energy Summit. Asked whether production would continue to decline even if two huge Arctic gas pipelines were built, Raymond said, "I think that's a fair statement, unless there's some huge find that nobody has any idea where that would be." HealthandEnergy.com affirms Mr. Raymond's statement. And we won't go ahead and read all of that statement. So what will happen when our natural gas is exhausted? Can we generate energy from wind and the sun? The answer is no, by the way. All the windmills in California and combined across the whole state don't even produce as much electricity in a year as just one single coal-fired energy plant for generating electricity. It's just not a practical alternative. Wind and solar energy are prohibitively expensive, it says, and may take years to develop. Are there better alternatives? Can we maintain our standard of living by burning oil? The world produces 80 million barrels of oil a day. The United States has 5% of the world's population, consumes 20.52 million barrels of oil a day. Europe has 7% of the world's population. It consumes 16.45 million barrels of oil a day. China has 23% of the population and consumes 5 million barrels of oil a day. But China, India, and other developing countries need more oil. If oil peaks in late 2005 or 2006, how will the U.S., Europe, and other developing nations deal with their growing need for oil? And China's acquiring fields in Saudi Arabia. China's going on and building a state oil company. Is the world really running out of oil and natural gas, or is the oil industry running the same scam they ran in 1973 when stations and TV stations broadcast advertisements that depicted dinosaurs lumbering through the forest and a somber voice proclaimed, "There are no more dinosaurs, the world is running out of oil." The advertisement suggested oil comes from decayed dinosaurs and organic matter, but that isn't true. Honest geologists admit they don't know where oil comes from. But Professor Thomas Gold, an astrophysicist at Cornell University, theorized that oil comes from the methane and contains heat-loving bacteria that inhabit the heated biosphere beneath the surface of the Earth. It could be. Who knows? If Thomas Gold's theory is correct, oil is constantly replenished and there is a perpetual supply of oil and natural gas. Has anyone accessed the subterranean regions of the Earth to evaluate Professor Gold's ideas? The Russians have. That's why Russia is the second largest oil producer in the world today. Russians started drilling in an exploration well named Kola SG-3 finally reached a staggering world record depth of 40,000 feet. Since then, Russia oil majors, including Yukos, have quietly drilled more than 310 successful super deep oil wells. If that's true, why haven't we heard about the discovery? Because the oil companies, the media moguls, and the occult hierarchy that controls them don't want the public to know energy shortage is contrived. Saudi Arabia, which funds international terrorism, and the major oil companies have made billions of dollars since they raised the price of oil. They make trillions of dollars, destroy our economy, and enslave our people if we don't expose the deception. Dr. M. King Hubbard predicted U.S. oil production would peak between 1965 and 70. It peaked in 71. How did Dr. Hubbard know that would happen? I suspect he knew the oil cartel was going to finance the environmental movement, get laws enacted that would restrict oil and natural gas production, and block further development of nuclear power in the United States. Gary Benoit's article in March 27, 2000 issue of the New American notes, in a letter published to the February 12th New York Times, Senator Frank Murkowski, chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, identified the main problem not as a lack of domestic resources, but as the administration's efforts to send oil development out of this country through taxes, environmental decisions, and bad policy. The article continued, the United States is awash in energy resources, and our dangerous dependence on foreign sources could be ended simply by allowing the development of those resources in a free enterprise environment. So he's getting right on the money here, that these things are a scam, that talk about there being, you know, not enough oil and so forth. It's just not true. The oil and natural gas reserves cited in the EIA report are only a fraction of the reserves that have been discovered. Lindsey Williams was the chaplain for the construction crews that built the Trans-Alaska pipeline, and it was at Prudhoe Bay when Atlantic Richfield tapped into one of the largest oil fields in the world, but the field wasn't developed. I researched that story and found a BP executive who confirmed the information. Radio Liberty carries Lindsey Williams' book, The Energy Non-Crisis. I will cover more of this incredible story in my next article. He says peak oil too. This is precisely what I've understood and read for time. I don't know about the conspiracy part. Perhaps that's true too. But we have a lot of oil in the Earth's crust. It is effectively infinite in terms of, you know, how much we could possibly get out. There is no oil shortage. There's no energy crisis. It's all a myth, folks. If prices rise, technologies are developed to extract things more effectively. That's just the fact of the matter. And it goes on better and better as time goes on because technology is always improving. You used to only be able to drill in the ocean 500 feet just 15 years ago. Now we can drill 5,000 feet. It's always new ways of getting at the old stuff. All right, we've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Gobin today. Glad you joined us today. We're still in need of volunteers and financial support. We have many needs here at TRN, a volunteer organization. If you can help out, go to the tyrannyresponse.com website and click on the contact tab and go email somebody and let them know. Don't forget the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition, which is online also. Sign it in 30 seconds under the Related Media tab. Anyway, we'll look forward to having you back here this Monday morning for another great edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us at 7:30 Monday morning right here on TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, for another installment of Christian Worldview.